people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ain't ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and crossing down the key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You run down my country, man. You walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and fought down the key. If you don't love it, leave it. Singing be a warning. And you run down my country, man. You walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, I start off by an observation I made several times this week about the police in my hometown here of Hamilton, Ontario. And this week, at least three times, driving down the Lincoln-Alexander Parkway, I have found they're lurking along the median, the police. That's right. The police. What are they doing? Well, they've got their radar. And I think, now we've got this time of coronavirus. We've got a lot of very dicey people in my town. A lot of poor people, a lot of drug addicts, where something of the dumping ground for halfway houses, and so on. Many other communities, apparently, according to the police, give addicts or people just released a bus fare to go to Hamilton, and they become our problem. Well, anyway, the point being that there is plenty of crime in Hamilton. So what are police cruisers doing out revenueing? And that's what it is. This is an expressway. What are they doing revenueing? Well, what they're doing is simply raising money. It's near the end of the month. Each month, although they'll claim they don't, please have a quota. They're out there near the end of the month trying to meet their quota. At the expense of the motoring public. Now, add to this the fact that many people are losing their jobs. many people will have lost their job. Many more people will lose their job over the next week or two. If we're lucky, there'll be a rebound, as there was in China and in South Korea. We can perhaps be more confident about South Korea. They don't lie. The Chinese, well, they don't lie. Normally, the Chinese lie all the time. So there will be a rebound. But for the moment, many people are losing their jobs. Anyway, April 1st is coming up. That's, for many people, the day the rent's due or the mortgage is due. And there are people who are severely stressed as to whether they'll be able to pay the rent. Other people are very afraid of losing their jobs. Over a million people this past week, a million, filed for unemployment insurance. That is the most ever in a single week. When these people will be rehired, or if they'll be rehired, some businesses are going to go out of business because they've been ordered to close. Some businesses can simply shut down. There's no income coming in, but there's no expenses. On the other hand, and some businesses can continue perhaps a little bit of work by mail order or over the internet. But should this go on more than a couple of weeks, there will be businesses that will go out of business. And that means the employees of those businesses will not have a job to come back to. All of this is by way of judgment. Where is the judgment on the part of the police? Well, I'd argue there isn't any judgment. There's bad judgment. It's revenue-y. And that's among the, the most despicable of behaviors. Every time I drive by and I see one of these cops, I don't know if they can tell, but I turn around and I glare and shake my head. What a, you know, complete and utter waste of the taxpayers' money. But worse than that, they are adding to the misery of an already shell-shocked population. I continue to pick away at this coronavirus matter. on the one hand, there are people who say it is exactly as it's being presented to us. On the other hand, there are people who say it is, if not a complete hoax, a wild hysterical exaggeration that the coronavirus is a virus, is a flu, an influenza. We have those at all times. I think something like 10,000 Americans die every year of influenza, or of the so-called flu, of one sort or another. And there's barely more than a yawn about it. Why the near hysteria now? Well, again, there are many interpretations. One, that perhaps overreaction. Of course, some people fear something far more nefarious, that we are being set up for something. I want to take a cautious position. But I do feel that one thing that we aren't going to be set up for is more intrusion into individual liberties. And, you know, they will be taken away. In every case, we'll be told, it's coronavirus. In other words, it's just for the duration. Well, let's hope so. But I wouldn't count on it. But back in 1917, something called the income tax was introduced. In Canada, at first it was voluntary. It was a temporary measure for the war. 1917, we were in the in the middle of the First World War. It was a temporary measure. Well, that was 1917. It's 103 years later. The temporary measure is still in place. One thing that I'm concerned about, and I think I may have mentioned this before, and that is that the request on by increasing number of outfits, in this, including the big food supermarket chain Sobeys in Ontario and Eastern Canada, the LCBO, or Liquor Control Board of Ontario, which largely markets hard liquor but all and wines. It doesn't have a complete monopoly, but a near monopoly. And the widely popular Tim Hortons Donut and Coffee Shop. They are strongly urging people to use credit card or debit card, not cash. Now, we all know that banknotes tend to be dirty. They've gone from hand to hand to hand to hand. In the best of times, it's probably good not to immediately put your fingers in your mouth after you've been counting cash, which is why a very good rule always is, well, wash your hands, quite apart from the coronavirus. So, yes, superficially, it would make some sense for both parties not to be handling cash, although the most of the tellers, etc., these places are wearing gloves. But we also know that the globalists desperately want a cashless society. Well, I know it's more efficient, so people think. More efficient. Well, as long as everything is electronically connected. But in case of the failure of electricity, then what? What good is your little piece of plastic? But there's a greater worry rather than just the what if. And the greater worry is this. That piece of plastic then becomes all you have. Now, you may have credit, several credit cards, or you may have several bank accounts and debit cards and all that, but he who issues the card can also cancel it. And in a totalitarian society, where the banks, I mean, certainly in Canada, the banks are the complete flunkies of the government. They protect their profits, not the account holders' interest. Believe me, I've seen examples of that. So, if the government says, cancel John Smith's card, they'll say, how fast? And you're poor John Smith, and your card's being canceled. And in a cashless society, you are now worse than a nobody. You're actually worse than a beggar. Because as a beggar, you won't be able to take cash because there is no cash. And you have no card. Perhaps you can take charity, or somebody will give you a cup of coffee. Okay. Now, what sort of an existence is that? I don't think any of us wants a cashless society. But as emergency measures have a sneaky way of becoming permanent measures, don't count on it. So every intrusion into individual liberty should be fought. Yes, even in the time of the coronavirus crisis. Anyway, here, E. Michael Jones is a powerful writer and commentator. And this is a comment that he's made, what he calls medical martial law, about the coronavirus crisis.
Pestilence is portrayed in scripture, punishment for sin. when David offended God in a way that could not be avoided, God, in his mercy, gave him three choices. He could succumb to famine for 3 years, he could be pursued by his enemies for 3 months, or he could submit to pestilence for 3 days. David, as we can all imagine, was in a bind here. Choosing your punishment is not the nicest thing to do in life. But he ultimately decided he'd rather fall into the hands of God than the hands of man, and so he chose pestilence. We're in a similar situation today. We've had pestilence inflicted on us. And like David, we have to be able to distinguish between pestilence and its alternatives, because the situation is more confusing now than it was then. In particular, some people are saying that this is war. The governor of Indiana said it was war. The people of China agreed with the government of Indiana, and they said it was war too. They said it was a biological weapon unleashed on their people by the United States. In order to clarify the situation, we have to be able to distinguish between categories of reality and categories of the mind, between things and thoughts, between existence and essence, because these are always confused in the world we live in, and things are invariably used as a justification for categories of the mind getting imposed on all of us in the name of science and in the name of nature. So, for example, we have a category of nature, women. Everybody knows there are women, they exist. No one can dispute their existence. At this point, the oligarchs arrive and say, well, there's such a thing now as women's rights. You believe in rights, don't you? So therefore, if you don't dispute the fact that there are women, you have to accept that there are women's rights, which means you also must approve of abortion. Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Someone just pulled a fast one on us here. And something similar is happening here with this virus. So we have a fact of nature. There are people dying and there are people who are getting sick. That's existence. How can you weaponize this fact? You can weaponize it by imposing categories of the mind upon us, by telling us not only what it is, namely a coronavirus, but what you need to do in order to be protected from it. And that is precisely what the oligarchs are trying to do now. The coronavirus does exist in reality. It is a thing. But that doesn't mean that the meaning flows naturally from the thing. And the meaning that I can see at this point is the coronavirus is now being weaponized by the oligarchs in their attempt to regain control of the narrative, which they lost in the year 2019. The fact that we are talking about this right now means, to some extent, that they have succeeded. It is dominating our conversation. And that is the means they use to basically form the categories of our mind so that they go along with what they want us to do and not necessarily what is the best thing that is in our interest. The best example I can give you is France. Those of you who understand what's going on know that for the past 2 or 3 years, France has been subjected to demonstrations by people wearing yellow vests. This is a protest against the oligarchic control of France in the same way that Brexit was a protest against the oligarchs in England and Donald Trump's election was a protest against the oligarchs in the United States. Macron could do nothing to stop these protests, which began when he raised the price of gasoline to get the poor people to pay for the rich people's debts. He tried one thing after another, sent the police onto the street with tear gas. Nothing solved the problem until the arrival of the coronavirus. Now, Monsieur Macron has declared the equivalent of medical martial law. Now the Frenchman, in order to go outside, has to download a permission slip on his computer. And if he doesn't have the permission slip, the police will arrest him. This is just one instance of one government using this crisis as a way of reasserting control over a population that no longer believed in the conventional narrative. That's an example. But there's a paradigm here. These people, the oligarchs, discuss paradigms all the time. They call them scenarios, and they use elite institutions like the Rockefeller Foundation to do what they call scenario planning. And one of the scenarios they planned in 2010 was an outbreak of coronavirus in 2012. And then they gave an example of what they were going to do at this time. Bill Gates, another oligarch, did the same thing in the fall of 2019. This lends credence to what the Chinese are saying, that this may very well have been planned. That this may be a biological warfare attack against countries like China and Iran, and that the oligarchs knew about it in advance. More evidence that they knew about it in advance comes from our illustrious Congress, where members like Representative Burr, a Republican from North Carolina, sold all his stock before the market crash because he had insider information. These are instances of how the oligarchs use these crises for their advantage. I think the best paradigm we can come up with is one that I've used many times before, and that's the example of what happened in Ramallah in March of 2002. During this period of time, the Israeli army entered Ramallah, occupied Ramallah, and then took over the TV stations, which were run by the Palestinians. At this point, they did something unexpected. They started broadcasting pornography over those TV stations. And at this point, the Palestinians were confronted with their own particular choice. If they went outside, they would be shot by Israeli snipers. If they stayed inside, their only source of information was the television, and if they turned on the television, they were forced to watch pornography. This proves that pornography is a weapon. In spite of the way it's portrayed, it is not freedom. It's a form of control that the oligarchs use to keep us under control, isolated. And lo and behold, we find that the same thing is happening now, under the guise of the quarantine subjected on us by the coronavirus. Pornhub, the biggest provider of pornography in the world, has offered Italians free subscription to their pornography channel so that they have something to do while they are forced to stay inside. The other thing that happened during this period of time is that church services were banned. So what we have is a good indication of the brave new world that the oligarchs are preparing for us. It's just like Ramallah in 2002 with a few minor changes. The people of Italy are now confined to their stuffy little apartments. They are not allowed to go out to church services, but they can download pornography to their heart's content. This is the world that is being prepared for us. Unfortunately, the church, which should have been contributing to the categories that were going to identify not only what this thing was, perhaps a punishment from God, but also how to respond to it by prayer. The church was completely excluded, as America Magazine cheer on the oligarchs in banning religious services. The article is tendentiously called, "I Am a Scientist. Catholics Need to Ban Mass," or something along that line. You can check it out in America Magazine. This has led to the world that we live in today. The church has no input. We are being forced into concentration camps on a worldwide scale, where we have access to drugs and pornography, but no access to the Mass. Needless to say, some churchmen are upset about this situation. Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano, also an Italian, is one of them, and he was able to distinguish between the categories of nature and how they got transformed into weaponized categories of the mind by politicians. "The ecclesiastical events of these hours," Vigano tells us, "have manifested clearly, if there was still any need, the tragic subjection of the church to a state that is striving to do all it can to destroy the Christian identity of our Italy by enslaving it to an ideological, immoral, globalist, Malthusian, abortionist, migrant agenda that is the enemy of man and of the family. By the way, in case you didn't notice, abortion clinics have not been shut down. Churches have been shut down, abortion clinics have not been shut down. So I think in doing it, in imposing the quarantine on us this way, the oligarchs have showed their hand. They have showed ultimately what their intentions are, as Rahm Emanuel said, how they are not going to let this crisis go to waste. What does that mean for us? Does that mean that God has abandoned his people? No, it does not. As a matter of fact, it means the exact opposite. And some people were actually perceptive enough to realize this. Roberto De Mattei, also an Italian, saw quite clearly that the imposition of quarantine means the end of globalism. The oligarchs function according to God's plan, even when they carry out their own wicked intentions. They are bringing about the very thing that they hope to avoid. And what all of these uprisings about were about, the uprisings in France, in England, and the United States, as elsewhere, were uprising against globalism, and here globalism is being destroyed by the very people who are trying to put down the uprising. This means that there has never been a time in human history when God was not in control of the events of human history. God cannot do evil. But he created man with free will, and in order to enable man to have free will, he has to allow man to do evil. Because without the possibility to do evil, there can be no free will. Just because he allows man to do evil doesn't mean he abandons us all to the wills of wicked men. Because God has the power to take evil and turn it into good. God can bring good out of evil. And that is the hidden message of what is happening today, if you have the eyes to see it. If you want the eyes to see it, I recommend a book. The book is Logos Rising, A History of Ultimate Reality, and it explains exactly how the story of Joseph is being fulfilled in our day. Joseph said to his brothers, "The evil that you intended to do to me has been turned by God's power into good," and that is exactly what we can say to the oligarchs, because then as now, Logos is rising. My book, Logos Rising, will be available in the first week of April. You can sign up for notification at fidelitypress.org. For more information on the weaponization of the coronavirus, visit culturewars.com.
And that was E. Michael Jones. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Here's a report from New Jersey. And there's a, this is actually of the Times of the Jewish Telegraph Agency. And it has shows us a banner here. And it says, "We will not Hebes with three parenthesis marks. Will not divide us." Bloodandsoil.org. Illustrative image of anti-Semitic banner draped over a Holocaust memorial in Lakewood, New Jersey. On July 2nd, this photograph is nearly 3 years old, July 2nd, 2017. "The coronavirus pandemic has spurred anti-Semitic chatter connected to Lakewood, New Jersey, Lakewood, New Jersey Township, with a large Orthodox population on social networks. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy responded by condemning racism connected to the coronavirus." Why are governors always, or public officials, always being urged to condemn people's opinions? No, you don't have to agree with the opinion. But I like to think that elected officials should respond to people's opinions. I mean, they are elected officials who are supposed to represent the will of the people, all the peoples, and that's one of the probably challenges that every elected official has to somehow reconcile the opinions of that are in any society are going to be somewhat varied. But anyway, under huge pressure from the Jewish lobby, you see this so often. Politicians condemning an opinion. This is New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy. Scapegoating, bullying, or vilification of any community is completely unacceptable today or ever, Murphy wrote on Twitter. There is a special place in hell for the small minority that do this in a crisis. Scapegoating, bullying, or vilification of any community. Well, that covers a lot of territory. On Thursday, Lakewood had 198 COVID-19 cases, by far the most in Ocean County, according to the County Health Department, the Asbury Park Press news site reported. Officials have not said which part of town or particular communities are experiencing cases. No, not likely, are they? There's another story this week out of another New Jersey town. Same thing. And the mayor condemned racism racism and anti-Semitism and xenophobia against Asians. Well, Jews are seen on the basis of the incidents of COVID-19 in Israel and in the United States, again, seem to be unusually susceptible. And Asians, or more exactly, Chinese, were the major way that COVID or coronavirus got into North America, out of the absolute stupor of disease in Hubei province or in and around the area of Wuhan. I mean, this is not scapegoating. This is true. And if, as would seem to be the case, Orthodox communities, especially in New Jersey, New York, have a disproportionately high incidence of coronavirus, well, then people have every reason to be cautious, right? Okay, story continues. As of Thursday, an online petition that was circulated Thursday called for Lakewood to be shut down during the pandemic. It received thousands of signatures, but appears to have been removed. On Facebook, groups for residents of Ocean County and Jackson Township, which borders Lakewood in the southern part of the state, featured maps showing Lakewood spreading the disease. Murphy said that there have been a few examples of non-compliant behavior, but communities across the state have taken the threat of the virus seriously. Okay. Police in Lakewood last week arrested at least two Jewish men for hosting weddings with more than 50 people present in violation of the state rules designed to curb the spread of the coronavirus. Well, you can't generalize about the whole community, there does appear to be a certain reluctance. Of course, Jews have for so long been indulged as being special. You know, they get to wear their costumes, and people have to pretend. Well, that's fine. You don't look weird. Oh, no, I wouldn't say you look weird. Jewish concerns go right to the very top of the list with politicians, because of the immense power of the Jewish lobby. Everybody knows that. Every politician who would deny it knows it.
not only does their religion tell Jews that they are they are the chosen people, but the behavior of our rascally politicians have made them special in many cases. We even have the nonsense that in the odd case where there will be some recognition of Christmas in public institutions, there's almost an equal recognition of Hanukkah. Well, Hanukkah is a not very important to them celebration among Jews. Jews constitute in the United States 2% of the population, in Canada a little less than 1% of the population. Why should they get, in a sense, equal billing with the Christian majority? Anyway, back to the story. A third wedding was broken up this past Thursday. The report did not say whether the event was a Jewish one or not. Well, this is not exactly much of a report, is it? Commenting on this story, Wanda Gonzalez Cartagena says the Jewish community have no consideration for the rest of the population of Jackson, Howell, Freehold, and Ocean Township. If they get sick with the virus within their community due to their behavior, they will suffer the consequences. However, one time they got infected, they go shopping with 10 kids to the other towns, affecting people that are following the rules. It's not anti-Semitism. It's their behavior and sense of being above everybody else. I used to live in Lakewood, and this time the police must do something about them. And this is Wanda Gonzalez Cartagena commenting. Now, she makes a good point. And while, okay, and there's a long time argument, are Jews a race or a religion or a state of mind? Let us use the same mental approach as that Jared Taylor does to the issues of race, and of course the accusation that's racist. No, that's race realist, and in her own way, Wanda Gonzalez Cartagena is saying that. She says it's not anti-Semitic to notice that a community, I think these are the Orthodox Jews, seem to be a law unto themselves and are disregarding some of the recommendations or orders in regards to the halting of the coronavirus epidemic. And she makes a very good point. If they were to keep it within their own community, fine. They want to kill themselves or damage themselves by their behavior, all right. But the problem is that they go into the larger community to shop with, and she says, with their 10 children, suggesting the large families of Orthodox Jews. And at that point, they put other people to risk. and therefore, they should be called on it. And this is a problem we face with communities that see themselves as special and different or even above the rules. When we call them on it, we should not retreat. We should not be beaten into a retreat by accusations, as the case may be, of racism or anti-Semitism. And similarly, the boo-hoo-hoos that you see or hear from the Chinese. There was a, I believe it was on, it was on CNN early today, two Chinese from different parts of the United States boo-hoo-hooing because somebody had made a nasty comment to them. The Chinese, not necessarily every Chinese, but Communist China bears a huge responsibility for the initial covering up of this coronavirus and the continuing lying We're not sure. We can't be 100% sure that what they're telling us today is true, although it does appear that they've turned the corner and there are far fewer cases and far fewer deaths, as far as we know. But their filthy habits, and I'm going to be talking about this tomorrow, of the wet markets, lays a very heavy blame on communist China and Chinese culture. And again, not every Chinese follows that culture. Not every Chinese insists on buying wild animals alive and fresh, slaughtered in front of them for their food. And I think intelligent people, will make distinctions. However, in case of doubt, I don't think there's any reason not to be cautious about Chinese people, especially if you don't know them personally. They don't live in China, they live in the United States or Canada. True, but have they or somebody close to them recently been in China or in the Wuhan area? That's a legitimate question and a legitimate concern. And as such, is race realism. I personally would not go to any of the Chinatowns that are in, I think about five of them in metropolitan Toronto. There's two in the next door community in Mississauga, half of Markham and Richmond Hills, one big Chinatown. I wouldn't go shopping anywhere near those places. In the Chinese areas. Why? Because I have no way of knowing if any of the people serving me or passing me by closely have recently been in Wuhan and may have the virus. We do know it got to Canada through somebody who had been to China and that person was reinforced by more people who'd been to China than another hotbed, Iran. Being cautious about that is not some vile form of hatred. It's common sense. Or, as Jared Taylor would say, race realism. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Got to take my musical break now. And I again like to thank Mark and Tina Palazzola for giving me this great CD of bluegrass music. It's a compilation that they put together, and I'm happy to share some of this with you. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the funny side of me. Thank you.
Roadside on a summer day, chatting with my best mates and passing time away. Lying in shadows underneath the trees. Get this saddle, it's just eating goober pee. When the horseman passes, the soldiers have a rule. They cry out the loudest, "Mister, here's your meal." But another pleasure inside the care of the knees. I'm wearing out your crown, there's eating goober peas.
Mississippi Valley, even on Sunday morning, you know that I'll be there. And we all come back for to be with you, good neighbor. Live a good life in the Mississippi Valley, down on the river. You know that's where I want to be. And the night comes on like a blanket chill. The winds of people come out in the Mississippi Valley, West Kentucky, Cairo, over in South St. Louis. There's a baseball game with the Legion Post on Tuesday. Have a good ride on a jukebox swing. Go down to the river, you know that's where I want to be. And the fields of corn, banjo music, catfish cry, and the tow of payload pushing upstream against the stars. And the letter come back from McCullough, Calhoun County, here in the middle of the Mississippi Valley. I'm in love, and you know that's where I want to be. Banjo music, catfish fry, and towboat payload pushing upstream against the stars. And when I come back from McCullough, Calhoun County, here in the middle of the Mississippi Valley, I'm in love, and you know that's where I want to be.
Paul Fromm, you're on the fighting side of me. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on altrighttv.com or whiteresistanceradio.com.
In days of yore from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together. The thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven.